Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Jamie Bologna. Let's start today with another battle in Washington, one that has a special resonance here in the Boston area. Federal funding for the Special Olympics is in jeopardy. President Trump's budget proposal includes a 10% cut in funding from Department of Education programs, and that would eliminate all the federal funding for Special Olympics, some $18 million. Now, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos is facing sharp criticism from both Republicans and Democrats for supporting this cut. Here's Republican and former Ohio Governor John Kasich in a video he posted to Twitter.
Special Olympics was the standard by which we gave people hope and respect and ability to live their dreams. To cut funding from it? Big mistake.
The pushback is also coming from Special Olympics Chairman Tim Shriver. Here he is on MSNBC.
The federal government, if it believes in full inclusion, and it does, our Constitution, our Declaration, and our laws tell us we do. And if the federal government has a role to support that, it ought to be investing in kids with special needs.
But this afternoon, Secretary Betsy DeVos pushed back against her critics at a Senate hearing.
It's been my responsibility to present the budget here on behalf of the administration, the president's budget. As I said then, and I'll say again, we had to make tough choices and decisions around the budget priorities.
And as we said, the Special Olympics have a particular resonance here in Massachusetts because they were founded by Eunice Kennedy Shriver. She was, of course, a member of the Kennedy clan. Her brothers were President John F. Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, and longtime Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy. But Eileen McNamara, Pulitzer Prize-winning former columnist for the Boston Globe and the director of the journalism program at Brandeis University, wrote about the Special Olympics last year in her excellent biography, Eunice, the Kennedy Who Changed the World. So when we heard of the bipartisan backlash against these proposed cuts, we reached out to McNamara to get her reaction.
Betsy DeVos picked the fight with the wrong person and the wrong organization.
And why is that?
Special Olympics is an iconic charity in this country. It's benefited so many people. There are more than 5 million people with intellectual disabilities who participate in Special Olympics. The amount of money that the federal government gives to Special Olympics is only like 10% of their budget. Why would you X them out of a federal budget when it does so much good for so many people?
So let's talk about some of the good that it does for so many people, as you say, because I think sort of the outcry over these proposed spending cuts we've heard from Democrats and Republicans alike just shows how widespread and popular the Special Olympics have become. So in terms of the reach, what's the impact of the Special Olympics today?
Well, we saw the reach of the Special Olympics this month when they had World Games in Abu Dhabi. That's the first time we've had these games in the Mideast. It's a reflection of what Eunice Kennedy Shriver did. I mean, she kicked down doors all over the world to get attention paid to these children. She pulled them out of the shadows in places like China, the Middle East, South Africa, and she gave them an honored place on the playing field. She also had these countries start paying attention to their other needs, their educational needs, their physical needs. She really was the master of a revolution for those with intellectual disabilities.
And now today, I'm seeing that the Special Olympics has school programs in almost 6,500 schools. According to their website, these programs have engaged nearly 3 million young people. You mentioned that this is just a small part of their budget. So $18 million, what impact would that loss have, in your view, on the Special Olympics?
Well, to exactly the kinds of programs you just described. I mean, it was the Special Olympics who said, let's put an end to the R word. And they launched that campaign in public schools all across the country to treat children with intellectual disabilities with respect. And you're going to take money away from that kind of a program? Their anti-bullying campaigns have helped so many children. They do physical work with these children. Do you know lots of pediatricians won't treat a child with Down syndrome? They don't want that child in their waiting room. So Special Olympics runs clinics to do vision testing, dental testing, all kinds of things for these kids that the regular medical system often closes them out of.
So, Eileen, they do a lot of good in the world today, and I wonder if we could actually take a step back here to when the organization was founded a half century ago, because just having something like this was a revolutionary idea, right?
It was absolutely a revolutionary idea. When she first formed the Special Olympics, it was called Camp Shriver in her backyard in 1962. Back in the 1960s, it's easy to forget, there was no special education. Children didn't have a right to a seat in a public school classroom until 1975. And they had that because of the Education for All Handicapped Children Act, which Eunice Kennedy helped write.
And you, as you write beautifully in your book, you know, it was largely through the sheer willpower of Eunice. Could you just remind us of her influence on politics and how she got this organization off the ground?
Special Olympics, in many ways, is almost the least of her accomplishments, because she put the needs and the problems of children with intellectual disabilities on the public agenda for the very first time. She influenced her brother, President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, to start a presidential panel on mental retardation. And within 2 years, she had legislation that he signed to eliminate those Dickensian institutions in which these children were once held and to get us on the path where they were entitled to a full public school education.
And Eileen and listeners, thank you for sticking with us through a slightly tough phone line here. But I'm wondering if you could also just tell us a little bit about some of the societal barriers that Eunice faced in getting this off the ground. Because as you mentioned, the 60s was a different time, a different place than today.
A different time and a different place for women as well. I mean, Eunice Kennedy Shriver was the unseen force of nature in her own family. She got interested in this issue, of course, because she had a sister who had intellectual disabilities. But she grabbed the power of the Kennedy Foundation, which was the family's charitable organization, and she used that organization to spend millions of dollars of her father's money on research on this issue.
And you mentioned her sister, Rosemary. Of course, through the years, and you wrote about this in your book, but there was a little bit of, pushback or different understanding of how the family treated Rosemary?
Well, Rosemary was born with mild intellectual disabilities. You can see that in films of the family back in the 30s. When they were in London, she circulated at social parties all on her own. She was a very beautiful young woman. But her intellectual disabilities were compounded by mental health problems when she became a young woman. And her father made the tragic decision to have her lobotomized. And she lost her ability to walk and talk. Even worse than that, he banned his children from seeing their institutionalized sister. And those 20 years were lost. And I think Eunice, when she brought Rosemary back into the heart of the family, spent the rest of her life making up for that decision that her father made and that she and her siblings obeyed.
So it sort of became her driving vision.
It did indeed.
So I'm also curious what other protections we think of today as byproducts of Eunice Kennedy Shriver's political work.
The Americans with Disabilities Act that was passed in 1990, that doesn't exist without Eunice Kennedy Shriver. Lowell Weicker, the former senator from Connecticut and the former governor of that state, was one of the chief architects of it. And he told me during research for my biography of her that her fingerprints are all over that legislation. She made sure that children with intellectual disabilities, adults with intellectual disabilities, were covered by that law, as well as people with physical disabilities.
So, Eileen McNamara, let's bring it back to today, because you mentioned at the top that Education Secretary Betsy DeVos picked a fight with the wrong person, and you mean, Eunice Kennedy Shriver here, even though she is no longer with us. So DeVos put out a statement defending her proposed cuts to the Special Olympics education program, saying in part, the Special Olympics is not a federal program. It's a private organization. She goes on to say that she loves their work and that she's personally supported its mission. But does she have a point there, Eileen, that the Special Olympics is a nonprofit organization and not a part of the Department of Education?
Well, it's true. There's no arguing with that. But that doesn't mean that the work they're doing isn't work that the federal government should be supporting. The anti-bullying campaigns, the work in schools, this is not a lot of money in the federal budget. I think it's small-minded to cut it out.
And you write in your Cognoscenti piece, Eunice Kennedy Shriver's son, Tim Shriver, he now runs the Special Olympics. We heard from him at the top of the show there in some tape. What lessons do you think he has learned about leading the Special Olympics from his mother, Eunice?
I mean, one of the things he learned is how to lobby Capitol Hill. Every time you win a victory on the Hill in an appropriation is a one-time victory. You have to go back year after year and fight to hold that line. And his mother taught him how to do that. She never rested on her laurels.
So in thinking about these cuts, we should say they might not ever happen. They're just part of the administration's proposed budget. And I should note they were also proposed in years past and rejected. So finally, Eileen McNamara, do you think these cuts this year will stand?
No, I don't think they'll stand. I think that what has caused people such anger about these cuts is not their expectation that they are going to happen, because I don't think they will happen. There is too much support for Special Olympics on Capitol Hill, bipartisan support for Special Olympics. I think this was a tone-deaf move, not the first one by the Trump administration and probably not the last.
And so, finally, do you think the legacy of Eunice Kennedy Shriver lives on today in Washington?
Oh, her spirit is hanging over the Capitol right this moment, and it is enraged. And I have to tell you, you do not want to be in the path of Eunice Kennedy Shriver when she was enraged.
Even years later. Well, that's Eileen McNamara. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and director of the journalism program at Brandeis University. And she's the author of Eunice, The Kennedy Who Changed the World. Eileen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, you can find a link to Eileen McNamara's Cognoscenti piece at our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, we'll be joined by two of the 25 millennials of color influencing Boston's art scene. I'm Jamie Bologna, and this is Radio Boston.